You're listening to episode 37 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on June 20th, 2010. Is a comprehensive system of language revitalization. It's viral, collaborative, and community-driven. In this episode, we'll pick up where we left off in the last podcast. Evan Gardner and I were discussing our experiences training people in the Wear Your Keys mentoring language and game at the Save Your Language Conference, hosted by Dustin Rivers in Vancouver, BC, June 5th and 6th. In the last episode, I had just finished talking about preparing the language hunters for the Tea with Grandma scenario. Here's where I continue that story.
So then we send somebody out to go get Grandma, and Susanna ran out, and it was very funny, because then Susanna came in and sat Grandma at the tea table, and then we had this very amusing situation where Susanna sat her down, looked at me, and said, what do I do?
Right? I'm looking at her as Grandma going like,
are we going to have tea? So that was sort of funny. Like, you know, if you're going to go get Grandma, be ready, right? And what is, start at the beginning. And what is the beginning? What is that? What is that? And maybe for Grandma, it's, hi, Grandma, you know, really. But I mean, if you just use your tools. And I was acting like I wasn't there, so I just smiled and was like, good luck. Good luck,
well,
Susanna.
And I was acting like I wasn't there either.
Yeah.
I was Grandma. I was
right,
like,
and you were deaf, so you didn't understand, you know, what do I do? So then, meanwhile, at the language hunter table, everybody's rubbernecking. What is Susanna doing? And so I had to break it to them. I said, you know what, guys? This is one of the realities. When you have one elder left, you don't get to be with them all the time. Somebody else is visiting with them right now. Somebody else is taking up their time. Or right now they want to watch their soaps, or they need to nap, or they're at the doctor's, or you just can't get there. So what you're learning right here is how to receive people who did manage to visit Grandma, and how to distribute what they've learned throughout the network of you language hunters. So if you can just accept this kind of heartbreaking pinch that you're in, then wow, will we make the most of it. We will make huge of it, right?
And let's start talking about the reality of the situation. Yeah. Like, so what we do is we're having a great time, right? Uh-huh. We're having fun and we're laughing and we're joking. And behind it all is this tragedy that we are on the edge and we got to do everything we can to harvest these moments. But we have to keep a positive attitude about it. We have to keep a fun attitude because we learn more when we're having fun. So hide your tears. Know that they're there. Have a good time.
And so my first question after saying that was, how are you warmed up and ready for the instant a language hunter with Grandma arrives back here at the table? Are you ready to distribute their information into a game? Are you warmed up? And they're like, oh yeah, warmed up. And then so they looked at all the objects on the table, and of course all the objects on the table were the objects for which we didn't know the nouns yet. There was the tea set. So Dustin is like, we need pens, stick, and a rock. You know, so stat. So he pulled out the pens, the stick, and the rock, and they started warming up, and they got ready. And then when Susanna came back with some information, boom, it went throughout the system.
So they started getting rid of the sticks, started getting rid of the stones, and they started replacing them with the teacups, teapot, spoon, napkin.
Instantly. And really, at that point, there was only one more piece of information that, from experience, I know I have to give a group in this position. And I'll just be totally straight and go technique, obviously, on everybody listening. For whatever reason, when you grab a piece of language, your first instinct will be to just say, what is that? And that's a great instinct. That's the beginning.
Great.
And then what you're going to do is you're going to say, what is that? And then you're going to say, is that a? And then you're going to say, what is that? And then you're going to say, is that a? And you might go to mine yours, but I notice if Peter's out there. So all the only next piece of advice that I had to give was go all the way to want to have give take people. Fold it into rich conversation, and then you'll own it. And boy, once they did that, they didn't need me anymore. And that was really
great.
Then I sat back and thought, shoot, I should be videoing this. Oops. You know? So.
Video any of that?
Oh, not a bit.
None of this caught on video?
None of it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, hopefully somebody got something on video. Jay, I hope you're out there. Hope you're videoing a little bit of that.
So that's really. So that ran for a while. Good stuff kept coming in, kept going out. And I was actually very. There was a very amusing moment where, because of the law, 2 feet. You really had a few different situations you could be in. You could be over at the meadow, resting on the couches during tea with Grandma. I didn't really see anybody over there. You could be here at the table of language hunters where I was sitting and watching on that very outer edge. You could be sitting down with Grandma Evan, and having tea. Or you could be somewhere else, anywhere else, right? And really, you could be in the bathroom, whatever. Well, the one other spot that people lined up was along the wall watching the Grandma Evan tea show. It was very interesting. It was almost like some folks really just couldn't handle not getting a front row seat on it. And folks who I even thought, like, wondered, wow, are they really getting a lot out of this workshop? You know, how their participation doesn't seem all that engaged. You know, I hope they're enjoying themselves. Boy, were they lined up soaking up tea with Grandma. Soaking up tea with Grandma. Maybe not copycatting, you know, maybe not playing any particular support role, but they were definitely a fringe absorbing the Grandma conversation. And that was the other geek moment. I thought, how funny that we have a room full of people totally engaged. Well, nobody's over at the meadow. You know, nobody's like with their nose in a book. Everybody has found some way to be totally enraptured by this situation of language hunting the last fluent elder we've got. I think it was such an emotionally compelling role play that you just had to find some way to fit in, you know.
So I'm there having tea, and there's just all this stuff going on. So I come in character, and we have decided this for next time also, that I am going to dress up as the quintessential grandma. So, like pop culture grandma. In order to suspend a little more disbelief, Mrs. Claus. Right. So I'm going to have on a little white, you know, kinky haired wig, permy wig, and some sort of like yellow, flowery, red, white dress kind of thing. And really what we want to do is make everyone laugh. We want to make air, because it kind of gets tense.
Yeah.
Because everybody's realizing, like, wow, this is just like the scenario I have at home, and my grandma's about to die. This is kind of heavy for me right now. Like, this is a little bit too close to home. So, yes, it has been scientifically proven. If you can make people laugh and give them a lighter heart, they will be more prepared to learn. And so, yeah, we're going to kind of pull out, you know, a gimmick and make people laugh, but also to suspend the disbelief and allow people to comfortably now hunt grandma in a way that's going to be the most beneficial. So next time Evan gets a dress and a wig, which is funny. Like we said, we will do anything to help save languages.
What did we say about wearing clown suits?
I guess, you know, watch out what you promise. So, I mean, definitely, there was a couple moments where I was really happy when people came back to the language hunter table and they were saying, Grandma told me this. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That was a level of immersion that I was glad we achieved. Here's a couple of problems.
Sukum Chuck River.
Here's a couple of problems. The tea was cold.
Yeah.
And then at one point I saw one of the language hunters grab some water, tea water. Well, there was a difference of opinion between two language hunters. One purposely went to get water to heat up to a boil to make more tea.
Wait, let me take this one. Let me take this one. Let me take this one.
So what happened was, so I'm sitting there as grandma, and something I noticed was happening, and Willem, you can say what you saw coming back at you at the hunter table, was that I was getting hunted, and then people were gathering information, and then they were going back to the table, but there wasn't enough time lapse. So the people who were going back to the table didn't have time to exchange information with the people who were freshly coming out of the Lotus to come hunt me again. So there was some confusion happening there. So some people were hunting language that had already just been hunted, which is fine because now you've got some checks. You've got some pingbacks to make sure that, you know, some verification that what you've hunted is correct. But also what happened was that the tea ran out. We ran out of tea. Because in the preparation for tea with Grandma, no one filled up the teapot. There was enough tea for 2 half cups of tea. And so when I had myself, Grandma, and I had one other person in front of me, but we actually had 2 other people, so we had 2 hunters. So there was 3 of us at the table, Grandma and 2 hunters. There wasn't enough tea for all of us. And one thing that I would, you know, definitely going to recommend, and it's kind of a funny thing that we didn't get a chance to debrief this at the end, but when you're going to go have tea with Grandma, you need to have tea. So in the role play, maybe people don't drink the tea, so people can kind of shift in and out, and then and nobody's like drinking and lipping the cup, so nobody's going to get sick. But, you know, if you sit down and I say, as grandma, I say, do you want tea? And they say, no, I don't want tea. Like, what, did you put poison in my tea? You just want to watch me drink the tea of death? What? So that's something that I would have liked to have hit in a little more meaty debrief had we had the chance. So the tea ran out. And so we got to talk about empty and full and gone. And I don't know if that ever got back to the language hunter table. Oh, good. And so, then Tiffany got up and said, well, do you want more water? And so we got to talk about more. And we also got to talk about water, the word water and tea and coffee. And so we got that little list down. And then she got up to get more tea or more water in one of those instant teapot, in one insta-hot, warmer
electric
tea kettle. Thank you. And she went, filled it up, set it down on the electric heater, and then she went back to the language hunter circle. Marty came out of the language hunter circle and was going to have tea with Grandma. He went to go get the water, and it wasn't hot. And so he went and poured the water in, and I just let that go just for fun. So what were you noticing as people were coming back to the hunting table?
Well, I was noticing a lot of differences of opinion. There was a lot of, I got something, but now I'm not so sure. So that was one thing. There was also a funny moment where a couple of instincts to translate into English, especially over the artificial sweetener, right?
Yeah.
So there is an ASL language that Grandma Evan used to describe the artificial sweetener. It's in her language. What does artificial sweetener mean? You know, like, I mean, if you want to, like, you could think on that, like, what does that even mean? And we tend to think if we can translate something into English, we know what it means, when all we know are words that are familiar, but we don't really know what they mean, right? Or what they mean. So the point is that there is some language that Grandma Evan used to describe this little packet of artificial sweetener.
Splenda.
That when someone brought it back, people wanted to say, oh, well, is that artificial? Is that stink? Is that stink sugar? Is that fake sugar? Is that, like, they wanted to turn it into a word, like an English word, which, you know, on some level, I mean, at the end, I wanted them to, like, what did you learn? What signs did you learn? And we wrote it up on the flip chart, and it required that they translate it if we're going to do that in their format, because obviously ASL is not a written language. But, I mean, also, you know, there's also sort of some willingness to be open and flexible about, well, it could have been all these things. And there was, but people weren't necessarily going that angle at first. They were kind of going, no, what is the word that it means in English? And it's like, well, if you're still doing that, you're going to decelerate your language hunting. You know, be ready for the words in the other language to have these fuzzy, inconsistent boundaries and overlaps with what maybe English words who seem like they mean the same thing, you know, that you want to translate them into. It doesn't map that way. It just won't ever map that way. Even the French and the Italian and the Spanish aren't going to use the same words for the exact same thing in the exact same context. Okay. So...
which gets into dictionary addiction.
That's, you know, so a little bit of dictionary addiction popping up. Like, what does it mean? Well, we're not finding out what it means. We're finding out how to respond physically in the situation. And that's total physical response. So I noticed that going on. That was kind of funny. And they didn't do too bad. I mean, the language hunters sort of sorted it out. The difference opinion was there. They were going to figure it out on their own, I could tell. They also noticed that they had a too elaborate of a lotus circle. Too many people were in the same lotus circle. They needed to butt off one or two more in order to absorb this massive amount of information coming from Grandma.
It was a massive amount.
And so if they were really going to go for all that information, they needed like two or three different groups getting fluent in just subsets of that information.
Now, we say it was a massive amount of information. And the reason it was a massive amount of information was because everyone was starting at the beginning, which is generally the hardest place to begin in any kind of language acquisition scenario. No one knows where to start. Everyone is always sorry-charlying each other right out of the gates, and so then you don't get people coming back because they're sorry-charlied, it's too advanced, they get overwhelmed, they don't think they can learn their language, I'm too stupid, my language is too hard. It's a question of sorry-charlie. They're not starting at the beginning. Wherever your language starts, they aren't starting at the beginning with bite-sized pieces, with the ability to add just-in-time information inside of some organized pattern that everyone is agreeing on, that everyone is hunting, that everyone is disseminating. And so, even though they were hunting this very specific list, a lot of other language was jumping in there, just sort of accidentally. But it's also just-in-time information because they're filling in the, here I go, curriculum of tea with grandma. So everyone can have this, you know, universal speed curriculum that we have on the website, and they can also have the universal speed curriculum of tea with grandma, which would be very interesting for people to video their own language and how you have tea with grandma and what information is going to come up in tea with grandma. And so it's a massive amount of information because it's just in time, and it's incredibly crucial information because these are the next bite-sized pieces towards fluency. They're starting at the very beginning, and they're working their way towards superior mastery of the language. And even this little tiny nibble at fluency, this first nibble at fluency, is huge and so filled with information and grammatical structure and vocabulary that by taking the time to really organize how grandma was going to be pulled and how the information was going to be pulled out of grandma and how it was going to be then pushed into the language hunters and to the network of people acquiring the language, it's a lot. And so to have two different circles of language hunters with less people so that they could start learning this massive amount of information and so that a bumblebee could, you know, come back from hunting grandma and then, you know, dump the language off into circle one and then dump the language off into circle two and then have both of the circles working the language and then have both of the circles able to come together later to cross-transmit and cross-check the information and then go back to grandma and verify, that would have been a little more efficient. And we thought about that. We thought that there might be too many people to do one single language hunting circle. We thought, no, I don't know if we should divide it off into two, but it turns out that that would have been the more appropriate thing. And so we're thinking that the number of that language hunting's lotus flower circle waiting to receive the information, you know, maybe that team is 7 ± 2.
Yeah, sure.
I think that's an excellent point. You know, 7 ± 2. It's a good size. So yeah, I mean, tea with grandma went great. And man, it... really, I describe it as an almost religious experience. Like, if that doesn't rewire how you think about everything, how you think about language, but even learning, like how you even see the world, how you see any environment, has that capacity to hold human learning, human communication, or not. You know, I don't know what'll do it. I don't know what'll do it.
And so out of this, we have a couple of new ways that we're going to do things. We are going to do the same thing with how we set up Tea with Grandma. We're going to do the same thing with how we organize the language team. We're going to do the same things with how we organize the list of known information and the information that we're looking for. And then what we're going to do differently is divide up the language hunting nests that the information is going to be dumped into smaller groups, 7 ± 2, and then which is the software development team rule for extreme programming. And then we're also going to check in with Grandma about halfway through. And what we're going to do is a little bit of fun theater, because it might be getting a little bit hot. Like, lots of fun is happening. Great fun is happening. And at one point, like, at one point during Tea with Grandma, one of my favorite points for me, I was getting really overwhelmed. Like, even just me as Evan was getting overwhelmed because I was kind of getting hit from both sides. Like, the two language hunters weren't actually necessarily working together. They were kind of working as independents, so my eyes were kind of shooting back and forth between them like a tennis match. And the table started getting really messy because somebody would hunt something and then something would spill or something would get put out on the table or something would get moved and then they would get up and run away and then the next person would come in and sit down. So things were starting to get cluttered. You know, I was getting worked from both sides. And
did Becky ever come over?
Did Becky ever? No, I don't think she
Becky needed to come over.
Did.
She would have set it up again.
She might, yeah, she probably would have. And of course, right out of the gates, you know, they said, do you want some tea? And I said, yes, I want some tea. And so they poured me some tea. Went, what is that? It's teapot. How do you say pour? And actually, the sign for teapot and pour is the same thing. Yeah. It's actually the sign for pitcher and the sign for pour are the same thing. So that confused them a little bit, but they got over it. They figured it out. And then David came over, and he sat there, and I said, well, do you want some tea? He said, yes. And I said, well, I want some milk, but there was only one little creamer out on the table. And so I got some creamer, and then Tiffany sat down, and she says, and I said, well, I want more creamer. And then she remembered the sign for how many that she got from the walk, and I gave her 3. And so she went over and got 3 more creamers. And then I asked David if he wanted some cream. He didn't want cream. And I was like, oh, you don't want cream? And he was like, no, I don't like cream. And I said, well, you don't want cream, because I didn't want to get into extra. Like, I was very nice, because I could have totally blown limit and said, well, what happens if you drink cream? Or why don't you drink cream? Or why don't you like? And we hadn't gotten to that vocabulary yet. So I was nice, and I limited. And he started fingerspelling, because David knows quite a bit of sign language. I guess he dated a deaf girl for a while, took a couple semesters of sign language. And so he starts fingerspelling something. And I actually missed it, because I didn't expect him to fingerspell, so I wasn't even paying attention to his fingers moving at first. And I was like, what? And so I missed it. And so I kind of made a joke out of it, like, what the heck is he wiggling his fingers for? I was like, blah, 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 blah. And just to give him this idea, like, look, that's kind of cheating.
Yeah, right.
Because nobody else here knows how to fingerspell, because right. We have specifically avoided fingerspelling on advice from several different ASL teachers in my past. Do not teach fingerspelling. Don't teach it. Just don't. Which, you know, there are contrary opinions to that, of course. And so then David's, he does this funny thing. He didn't know how to sign something. He was like, well, my stomach. And so he like started, you know, making this like bad face and like my stomach. So something wrong with him if he drank milk. And I was playing like I didn't get it. Like, well, what's wrong with you drinking milk? And so he looked at me and he yelled, I'm lactose intolerant.
Wait, I wonder if he had yelled with his deaf girlfriend, like in that same situation. That must be an old technique that he thought he'd pull out.
Totally possible. Totally not possible.
Grandma Evan.
No, not with Grandma Evan. That doesn't faze me. I've been practicing playing deaf for a long time. And so I just kind of looked at him and was like, what? And then Tiffany did this hilarious thing. She said, if he drinks milk, he poops. Yeah. And she made the sign for like poop running out. Yeah. So it was like, okay, all right, we got a great chuckle out of it. And that was a good time. So, but with me having that experience of being kind of like overly language hunted and kind of getting beat up a little bit at the table, I wanted a moment to stop and go meta, kind of break character a little bit and give people this little bit of redirection and say, hey, time to check in with grandma. And so we were saying, all right, what we're going to do then is we're going to kind of do this sort of snake oil magic trick where the healer comes in, where Willem the healer comes over to grandma and says, like, you know, by the powers of where your keys, I am going to give you the gift of hearing and speech for 30 seconds. And he puts his, you know, he lays on of hands and he says, you know, deafness be gone. And I say, and I don't want to break character too much. So I don't want to go all the way into Evan, but I want to go into grandma. And so now I can hear as grandma and I'm going to say, and this is what I would have said, I'm feeling a little bit beat up here. You all are asking me so many questions so quickly, and you're leaving a mess on my nice table, and I want to help, but it's confusing, you know, to kind of give them this sense of like, okay, slow down, take it easy, talk to each other, figure out what you're doing, and make tea with grandma this very relaxing experience for grandma, so grandma doesn't feel like anything is happening. And part of the problem was that we didn't have a lot of time. So we could have certainly spent we could have easily spent 2 hours on tea with grandma. Easily spent 2 hours, maybe even 2.5. Like it's a chunk. So in a 3-day workshop, we could definitely have hit that more beautifully, more elegantly.
Definitely. Oh my god.
Yeah. So amazing. So anything else about tea with grandma?
I've got one more thing.
No. No? We don't have tea with grandma? What was my other thing? Oh yeah, a funny thing that I keep noticing is that people are trying to hunt the word yellow by using the Splenda packet. And they keep asking me, they keep throwing me the Craigslist, so they start signing, well, this is red, and this is black, and this is white, and then they point to the Splenda packet, which is yellow and blue, and say, what's this? And so I say, white. And they're like, white? But the Splenda packet is yellow and blue. And I say, yeah, white. And I tear open the Splenda packet and I pour out the white artificial sweetener. And I point to it and I say, white. And then they go, ah. And then they point to the yellow portion of the packet and they say, what's that? So that's kind of a fun little moment. And then a really nice thing that I noticed that you did was after that was all done and after you took grandma away to the doctors, then we went back through the list and we said, okay, what did we get? What language did we have? We set out to get this, and we got this, and this was what was on the list to get. And the lists don't necessarily, you know, map out one-to-one, but pretty close. And I think the one little piece that we missed in the debrief was, because of time constraint, was, all right, you are going to go see grandma again next week. What are you guys going to do differently? And really give them a chance to process all that. Well, we're going to have this prop and not that prop. And I'm going to bring something with me this time. And right. I'm going to make sure everything's clean. And so.
We really didn't do enough debriefing. It's not by a long shot.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have enough time to do a lot of debriefing.
I think, honestly, we were stuck with a really impossible problem that I think we've done a bang-up job. That where your keys is so impossible to describe or explain without experiencing that we cannot hope to turn the world crisis of endangered languages around using this toolkit unless we can communicate what it is to experience where your keys, whether or not people can apply it as well as we'd like. Certainly they have some level of completely applicable tools, but to the extent that they can't go magnificently and immaculately hunt grandma's language, well, you know, but what we had to do was take them all the way through tea with grandma and to speed dating so they understood the scope. Now, next time, we can start getting nitty-gritty, But you know, if they didn't have that experience, we would still be explaining them. We would still be struggling with, well, this won't work with my language, or how will this apply? You know what I mean? And so once we get to the point where it's like, oh my God, this is a religious experience, and we skimped on the debrief, and you know, my mother, who's a world-class facilitator and trainer, has this thing she says where the learning is in the debrief. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it's, you're back to that same thing of, do you go for proficiency or the craft of language hunting? You know, do you get them to the point where they can, you know, have enough experience so they can even make decisions about where they're going to go? Or do you you go for, you know, all totally technical and say, well, everything we're going to show you, you're going to have to get totally fluent. I mean, the Wariuki's techniques are very contextual. Yeah, we prioritize fluency over proficiency, but if we did that, I tell you, if we did that this time totally rigorously 100%, there's a lot of people who still wouldn't quite get how this is going to help them hunt grandma. Yeah. You know, now they get how it's going to help. Now the next thing is to really get fluent in doing it.
Well, and that's why we want people to please return Warrior Keys players.
Right.
So please come back to a workshop, and now we with more return players and more return players at each workshop, if we have, you know, at each workshop 4 or 5 return players, this is going to go faster and faster and faster. Yeah. I mean, because then we're going to have 4 or 5 different return players in the pairings that are going to take people just faster and faster and faster through this. So we will be able to spend a lot more time on really debriefing things through. And that way, return Warrior Keys players are going to really see the intricacies and how we've set this up and how they can apply it even more. And it's going to allow for the opportunity for the folks who are brand newbies a little bit more insight, because they will have gone farther faster and with more ease because we have more tutors in the room. So there was one last thing in the debrief with at the end of the first day, or I'm sorry, at the end of the second day there with that had to do with you with Grandma. Marty said, so a couple of times Grandma just spouted off a bunch of language.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow, we asked her a question and she just went, brrr. What do you do with that? And my response to him was, enjoy it. A lot of times when you are going to go to Grandma and you're going to say really simple, like, what is that? She's going to be so excited that you are talking to her in your language that she is going to think that you are fluent, and she's just going to go, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So I said, enjoy it. Enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it. Enjoy it and try to copycat and sing along with it so you can catch a little bit of the song and try and say it back to her. And she'll laugh and you'll laugh, and then you'll say, what is that? And you'll bring the conversation right back down to your level and roll from there. This is why it's very important when you do go have tea with Grandma, have a recorder rolling. Yeah. Because Grandma's going to be excited and she's going to remember some stuff and she's going to want to talk. And so it's very important to be able to gather this language and to be able to dump it off into a team of human live recorders. But it's going to be also very important to get this down on a recorded format, preferably video, so that you can actually watch Grandma's expressions and watch her body language when she's telling you this crucial information. So the recorder, the audio recordings, won't quite cut it when it comes down to it. Video is 100% better. And video of her relaxing in her living room with tea in front of her is very, very useful. One little problem that I'm noticing, so I've got lately, over about the last year or two, some exciting things have been popping up on my radar, and that is Skype. Live, real-time, no-delay video conferencing between computers. Free video conferencing conversations that are very recordable and very easy to sort of manage in a database and email to friends and that kind of thing. So Skype. Way to go, Skype. But here's the problem, is that now a lot of people are using it as the excuse of not to go visit Grandma. oh, well, she's got Skype. Grandma's great on Skype. Oh, it's so funny. People wouldn't think that she's, you know, as technologically savvy, but Skype is so simple that she just puts on the headset and we just Skype away. But now you get grandma's body language talking into a box, talking into a little camera. Her eyes aren't looking at you. Her eyes are sort of looking down and away, or like up and into the corner, or wherever.
Scattered willy-nilly.
Oh yeah,
there's no
mirror neuron ability, and no real emotion, and you don't have the props laid out in front of you. So like when the tea lid falls out of the teapot and goes down and breaks the teacup, you don't get the reaction and the real life like, oh crap, language. That is important language. You just broke a teacup in your lap. You're going to swear. And I want to know what grandma sounds like when she's swearing when there's an accident. Not when she's swearing when she's so angry that, you know, I wrecked her car. Yeah, right. But when she's, you know, upset and afraid because she just blew open a cup, a porcelain sharp, oh my goodness, you might bleed cup with hot tea in it. I mean, man, she just threw a whole collection of razor sharp knives filled with hot tea into your lap. I mean, grandma's going to freak out. And I want to hear that language. I want to see her body language. I want to know what is culturally appropriate for what happens. I also want to know what's culturally appropriate for the language that she uses when I inform her that I wrecked her car. That's a very important language. That those things are being lost with this effort on writing it down in dictionaries.
When you set up that conversation about wrecking her car.
So that's my last thought about what do you do when grandma starts responding to what you want her to respond to, which is with fluid and quick and more difficult language than you are prepared to deal with. So now this last part of the workshop, which is language speed dating. Now what we want to do is we're starting now to apply all of these techniques that we've gathered. And we've gathered these techniques over the medium of sign language because we want people to be able to start attaching signs and sign language to their own spoken language in the grammar structure of their language, not in the grammar structure of sign language. But we give people enough sign language so that they can start peeling apart the ASL grammar or the Pidgin Sign English grammar and start word for word or concept to concept, start attaching that to their own spoken language. And we now realize that by this time in a workshop, people really have an idea of the pattern language structure of the Where Your Keys sort of acquisition universal speed curriculum. And now it's time to start applying that to their language. So again, like we said, what we're going to end up doing at the next workshops is where we're going to get is after the speed dating is that we're going to start building each language's curriculum to allow for the participants to go home with a lesson in hand, a usable, beautiful lesson in their pocket that they are going to land and dump onto a friend. So the speed dating scenario is how do you now go hunt spoken language? So individually, which is going to be the most likely scenario, you're going to be standing somewhere and someone is going to be standing there with a t-shirt on that says, I heart Russian, or I heart speaking Japanese. And they're going to be in line at the bank. They're going to be sitting next to you on the bus. They're going to be sitting in a cafe somewhere. And you are going to now start practicing your ability to hunt language. Now, we know that you become a better language hunter by practicing hunting language. And we always get this sort of feedback after workshops, like, well, no, I haven't really started, you know, hunting my grandma because we haven't gotten together. And this, you know, months are going by, weeks are going by, their language hunting skills are being lost. And so we say, look, go out right now, hunt some language. But, you know, I don't want to embarrass. Oh, the list of excuses. That was a funny thing Marty said was, what you guys have done is you've gone and taken away all the excuses.
Yeah.
And then, what was his name, Robert? He said, well, now I don't have any excuses for not learning my language.
Yeah, that was great.
Yep. Sorry. Can't excuse yourself anymore. Yeah, superhero Robert. So now in order to get that experience of language hunting, just for language hunting's sake, we need to set up a scenario where it doesn't matter if people remember the language that they've hunted. They remember the experience of hunting language. The techniques are more important than the actual language that you are gathering. So that you can just start hunting and hunting and hunting, and you're going to see what pitfalls there are. You're going to gather that ability to language hunt by hunting languages you don't care about. Oh, I heart Italian? Great, I don't care about Italian. I'm going to go hunt some Italian, and I will figure out, oh, you know what? The best prop for me to hunt Italian is a rock and a stick. The best prop for me to hunt Vietnamese is a rock and a stick. The best prop, not a red pen for Vietnamese. No, I got into that trouble before. So now people start building these little things that they keep carrying around in their pockets. I now carry around a little tiny black knife. It's almost useless, except that it is a really nice prop, and it's a little tiny, and it fits in my pocket. So, and it doesn't have the personal attachment like the keys have, which we've explained on a previous podcast. There's too much personal attachment to it. So, although keys are effective if you're doing a one-on-one game. So we set up the scenario of speed dating. And so we do a little model conversation, which we have, Willem and I have found a little bit of, tweaking that we want to do on that. And so what we did was we set up the Lotus where people can just kind of hang out and warm up, getting ready to speed date. And then we asked the crowd, okay, how many languages do we have here? How many people are at least at an advanced ability? And I did that on purpose. I said, how many people can speak at an advanced level? I did it for two reasons. One, I wanted to see who in the crowd actually was an advanced speaker of their native language. And so we got a hit on that with Myra. And then the next question was, all right, well, now how many speakers do we have at that level? And we had Jay, and he can speak beautiful Swedish, apparently. And then you, and you did Russian, and and then we had this guy Michael, who showed up at lunchtime of day two. And I gotta say, that guy is a smart guy. And an interesting thing that happens at Warrior Keys Workshops is that, you know, now that everybody has this concept of, you know, play nice, no curveballs, everybody gets there together, language hunting, travels with Charlie, sorry, Charlie, all this kind of thing, and this beautiful, safe community that we can create in a very short amount of time, this guy walks in, he's like, so what's this all about? And I watched people, and because of those posters that you put up with the how fascinating, and he kind of walked around, and he's like, well, what's all this? And people were able to point to the, they pointed to the poster on the wall, and they said, and then they started sign languaging with him. Oh, well, this is what this means, and this is what this means, and this is what this means. And so within about an hour, and that was over lunch, so people were talking to him over lunch. So he showed up right at the beginning of lunch, which was actually kind of perfect timing. And so he had a chance to kind of chit-chat with people, and people helped him just like crazy. There was like taking one-on-one moments and talking with him. And so it came time to language hunt after lunch, speed dating. And so we said, hey, who speaks another language? He was like, oh, I'm advanced in French. So we're like, perfect. You're going to be a French guy. So we had Swedish, Russian, he did French, Chilcotin, and Squamish. So we have the language hunters, circle, Lotus circle, just sort of hanging out and brewing. And here's a funny thing that happens that we never tell anybody. We have the people over in the Lotus Flower that are warming up and kind of waiting their turn because we only have six slots for people to go language hunt. Whoever is sitting at the warm-up circle always does this. They're sort of sitting around and they're going, well, what do? Just kind of warm up? Well, let's not warm up. Let's go ahead and start speaking a language. So somebody in the crowd starts practicing playing a Lotus Flower style with a very informed and generous group. And they start playing their language. So they basically start practicing the what is that conversation that they're going to take home. And so Ramona started doing that with Cree. And then when it was her turn to, actually no, Tiffany started out with Squamish, and then when it was her turn to language hunt, then Ramona started in with Cree, and Ramona actually ran like a 20-25 minute game. She was beat by the end, and kind of so was everybody else. They were starting to get full, and then Ramona went through the alley, the gauntlet of speed dating, language hunting, and then she handed it off to Susanna, who started running the show in Cree. So after 20 minutes, Susanna's running the Cree. What is that lesson?
Someone who never has spoken any Cree ever before, right? Just a random attendee.
Random attendee. Never spoke, and as far as I know, doesn't speak any other second language. Has studied a couple others. I think she speaks a little Finnish or something like that, but really hasn't really studied any language. Well, hasn't become like advanced fluent in any language. So yeah, so she's running a whole lotus flower in Cree after 25 minutes. So so the gauntlet. So we run this for about a minute. And each person has about a minute, and they run. They start at Swedish, and a minute later I yell switch, and then they go over to Russian, and then I yell, after a minute, yell switch, and then after a minute in French, yell switch. And so it's fast. It's speed dating, and they really only have a chance to start wielding what is that? What is that? They have a red pen. Is that a red pen? Try to make me say yes. Maybe they can do a little make me say no when they pull out the black pen. And they just run the gauntlet. So by the time they're done running the gauntlet, their eyes are just swimming. But now they've had the experience of not caring about what the language actually is that they're learning. They're just running the gauntlet, practicing the setup. They're also practicing their entry. So they don't just walk up and say, teach me. They say, hey, I'm learning some French, and I see you have a shirt on that says, I heart speaking French. Can you teach me a little? You know, just the entry really is the part of the important part. So next time what we're going to do is we're going to model this a little bit differently, our introduction. And we're going to model it sitting down so that we can put a pen out on the table so that I'm not holding a pen. And we're going to model that the people asking, that the people doing the language hunting are going to be signing the entire time. They're signing. They're the person that they're hunting, the person with the I Heart Speaking French t-shirt, is not going to sign, but they are going to sign. And the other thing that we're going to do is make sure that either Willem or I are the first person that they hit in the gauntlet, yeah, so that we can tell them, hey, keep signing. Hey, sign. So that we give them that little memory. The other change that we're going to do is we're only going to run them through three people at first, three of the six, and then we're going to have everybody gather together and we're going to do a little mini debrief. Yeah. And we're going to say, all right, how did that go? Here's the thing that we're noticing. Okay, everybody, remember to do this, remember to do that, and then we're going to send them through the other three people. Yeah. So, again, just like Tea with Grandma, we need a midway check-in just to make sure that everybody gleans the most they can out of this activity.
And the other thing we're going to do when we model is we're going to start modeling the most common flub-ups.
Oh, right.
And the responses. Right. So I don't care if I make a mistake or I flub up. I'm going to apply technique. How fascinating. And then I'm going to reapply technique. But what are the most common how fascinating moments? Because, you know, it's one of those things. If I make a mistake and I'm still developing skill in how fascinating, I'm going to choke up a little, and I'm going to need some modeling on how to recover.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of funny little situations, a handful. There's a handful of funny little situations that have been repeating that I think we now know enough from our workshops that we can really hit all those.
And one of the first ones that we've been making this mistake is that the way that we are modeling this introductory conversation is kind of perfect. Too perfect.
Yeah.
Because we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so it looks so easy.
It's showing off.
It's a little showing off. Like, unintentionally showing off, but we know exactly what's going on. So for us, it's like no skin. So they're like, wow, that's so easy. And then they sit down and like, oh, that's not so easy. And then they feel weird because it's like, we are not worthy. And then, like, the practicing of how fascinating is... We may have even passed that moment where they can just roll a how fascinating without any worries. And they aren't signing because we haven't modeled the signing so much.
Yeah.
And so we got to get them signing. the biggest flub up that they get into is that they say, what, how do you say, what is that in your language? And, well, like in Chinookwawa, you say, well, Iktuguk. And then they say, oh, well, Iktuguk. And then they, you know, hold up or they slide over the black pen and they say, well, Iktuguk. And then you say, well, you know, Tlil Tumstikuguk, that's a black pen. And then they say, oh, crap, I forgot how to say how, what is that? And then they feel like they can't ask again. And so to model that, like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, of course you forgot how to say what is that. I mean, of course you did. So ask again, like, wait, how do you say what is that? Oh, well, Iktuguk. And then they go, oh, okay, well, Iktuguk. And then you know, to get that little play and then not worry and to get people in their own hearts to start doing how fascinating is on themselves is going to be really crucial.
Yeah.
The other kind of flub up is that they want to put both pens out on the table too quickly. And they want to start. They want to start pinging the. Is that a red or is that a black pen?
When they're forgetting what is that?
Yeah, they forget they what is that too soon.
What is that? And they want to bounce between the red and the black pen.
Yeah, so it's a little bit too soon for them to be doing that. So we're saying, okay, well, we're going to have to kind of ease off on that. So that's another modeling that we want to do is hold off one of those pens for a little bit until you get the what is that? That's a red pen. Is that a red pen? Yes, that's a red pen. Run through that a couple times, three times maybe is a good number. And then pull out your black pen to start getting the no, to start make me, to hunting the word no. So... yeah, so a couple little modelings there. Another issue that we had, I facilitated this part of the workshop. I facilitated the language hunting part. And one thing that I would certainly do differently is I would at first start out with one big warm-up circle and then have three tables, and I would place them farther apart than we had them. We only had them about 5-6 feet apart, and in that really echoey room, and that was too close. But we didn't really want to send everybody out into the hallway because that just kind of popped the bubble of this comfort, tight little fishbowl that we were in. So, but really, they should have been farther apart, and that was something that I could have set up a little bit better by kind of making it, instead of a straight line, I could have like kind of bent it around in sort of a J so that it would have kind of covered a larger portion of the room, sort of kitty cornered the room instead of picked a wall and traced the wall. Another thing that I fixed about halfway through was that these square tables were actually rectangular. And the way that I set them up at first was the long edge, so that the person being hunted and the hunter were too far away from each other. So I walked up and I turned all the tables so that they had the narrow edge between them. And that helped. They scooted closer and were able to hear each other a little better. You know, I'm really curious if... Well, something happened at the debrief that was interesting. One of the success indicators was whether or not half of the people at the workshop, three-quarters of the people at the workshop, were able to apply three techniques to language hunting. Three techniques, three specific techniques. Did they get a chance to apply those three techniques to hunt three spoken languages? The three techniques were obviously, limit, and setup. And only a few people raised their hands, when really every one of them applied obviously and limit and setup to the language hunt. I mean, that was really kind of obviously to Willem and I. We kind of sat there looking at each other like, really? You don't see that? And
maybe the question was so obvious that if they felt there had to be a trick to it.
Maybe it was too obvious.
They just had all done it, so why did we ask it? You know? Right. So it might be the more effective I would have said, oh, and you all did this, right? Right.
That might have been, yeah, just to frame it in a positive move. In a what do you call that? A presupposition?
Well, you know, and Myra, I don't know if she did any language hunting. So there's like one or two people who were stuck serving languages, I think.
That's true. So then, sort of at that last debrief, a very sort of interesting thing so came up. Oh, here's another thing. A woman showed up just before lunch, 11:30. Her daughter had come to a previous workshop that we did, and she really liked the Warrior Keys thing. She was 15, loved it, Squamish girl. Really liked it, had a good time. So her mom came. And we've been really interested in contacting and getting in touch with her mom because her mom is an ethnobotany expert there at Squamish Nation. And so a couple of the girls, Warrior Keys players, that we are trying to get to do the walk, we want them to, and they want to start incorporating plants and medicinal plants and ethnobotany concepts into the walk, which is what we think is brilliant. And we need Cease to help them out. And so Cease came, and she walks through the door and says, "Hi, I've never played before in my life. What do you want to do with me?" And we were like, "Oh, fantastic." So we wanted to show everybody that once you have a group of really good playing Warrior Keys lunatic fringers, that you can take one person and watch how fast we can take one person if we plop them down into the Lotus, how fast we can take them. So Cease was a great sport and was like, "Sure, do whatever you want with me." So we sat her down and we did technique Newbie in the Lunatic Fringe as a copycatter. So we set the timer, and we wanted to see if she could get to want, have, give, take, and have a want transaction, I want your something, in 15 minutes. And so we almost got there.
Yeah, we know what we did.
We got there in 20 minutes, not 15. Oh. Yeah. So we got there in 20 minutes. And it was fast, fast and furious. And we actually came up with a new technique, which was we did what is that? Make me say yes, make me say no. And then we went right into mine, yours, his, hers. And we didn't do the normal Craigslist that we usually do, which is me, mine, you, yours, he, his, she, hers. We cut it in half and just did the mine, yours, his, hers. And then went around the table and said, "Well, whose? What is that? Whose is that?" And then I went around and said, "Okay, now the Craigslist is me, mine, you, yours, he, his, she's, hers." And then we did, "What is that? Whose is that? Who wants my?" And I set myself up right next to the dollar bill so that we could do, "What is that? The thing in front of me. What is that? That's a black pen. Whose black pen? That's my black pen. Who wants my black pen?" And you did that great thing, Willem, where you were like, "I want it," to model this really fast conversation. And so I was like, "Oh, you want my black pen? Yes, I want your black pen. And oh, you take my black pen." So the very simplest interaction that we can have. And then the next thing up was the dollar bill, which is of course the most perfect prop we found to date because everybody wants the dollar bill. And so we said, "What is that? That's a dollar bill. Whose dollar bill is that?" And it was Dustin's. So Dustin was saying, "So Dustin, that's my dollar bill." And I said, "Well, who wants your dollar bill? Or who wants his dollar bill?" And so Cease, her eyes kind of lit up a little bit and was like, "Well, I want your $1. And then Dustin pulled, and we all as a whole group pulled her through like, "Well, I want your $1. And Dustin said, "You want my $1? And she said, "Yes, I want your $1. "Well, you take my $1. And she took his $1. Yeah. And so that was 20 minutes. And then she did the classic thing where she says, "Well, is this my dollar? Is this my dollar now?" And what I do at Chinook Night, and I've lost more dollar bills this way, was I said, "Yes, that is your dollar bill now. You have earned it. You bring that back. That's your dollar bill now." And so what I do is I deface government property, and I wrote on it in Chinook Wawa, "Cease, Yaga, Dala, Uguk. This is Cease's dollar bill now." And it's like George Washington is saying it, and so I drew one, you know, dialogue bubble coming out of one side of George Washington's mouth, and I put it in Chinook Wawa, and then I was hoping that Dustin would be able to write, "This is Cease's $1 bill coming out of the other side of George Washington's mouth," so we get George Washington with the $1 bill speaking out of both sides of his mouth, two Indian languages, "This is Cease's dollar bill." So that was great. So then at the final debrief, Michael is hanging out, this guy who showed up at noon, and everybody helped him, and then he helped us by doing the French speed dating. And something that I found out about halfway through the speed dating thing was I looked over at him and I was like, wait a minute, you're not teaching French to everybody. What are you doing? And I said, what are you doing? And he says, well, actually, I'm hunting Squamish out of some people, and I'm hunting sign language out of other people, and other people I'm pushing French, and they're hunting French. So he was like playing right out of the gates, playing some Warrior Keys, and just doing great, having a good time. So at the final debrief, so 4 hours later, he's in the final debrief with us, and he comes out with this, you know, what strikes you about the, what was the most, what stood out for you in the works, in the workshop? And we went around and we hit everybody one at a time. And he says, well, what strikes me the most about this is that it's a community-based, non-hierarchical, teach and be taught information as quickly as possible so that in the future all of us are trained teachers and trained learners so that we can make all languages strong. And we're just like, what? Where did this guy come from? In 4 hours, he gets the entire idea, the whole vision, the whole future of where it's going, and some of these really sort of meta arguments for how are we going to do this? What are some of our obstacles? What are some of our strengths? What are some of our weaknesses? Just like, all right, well, you're in. And, yeah. We had some really nice end conversations. Went through some very specific next steps with people. And, yeah, got a lot of goodwill going, and a lot of people with some very specific next steps. And we ended the workshop, went out to dinner, and then at dinner we were talking with Dustin, Heron, and Marty. So Willem and I, Dustin, Heron, and Marty, and we asked Heron, like, well, what are you going to do with this? And she has 8 speakers.
This is actually the best moment of the workshop, so listen up.
So we're sitting there, and Heron's like, how do I get to Superior as quickly as possible? And this part of the podcast might be called Get to Superior by playing at what is that? The fastest way to get to Superior is to start at the beginning. And play, play, play. Language hunt, what is that, with any language you can get. And then start going through the steps of gaining a very basic fluency with limited vocabulary and with lots of sign language and lots of play. And so we started talking about it, sort of theoretically talking about it. And then I was like, you know what? We could either talk about it or we could set up what we do with Heron and say, look, if you really want to do this, we are absolutely ready to support you. And so what are you going to do? And so we asked her, the first thing we want to do is carve out a same conversation, time and space. What day are you free? What chunk of time are you free? And she's a young girl, so she's like, well, you know, I'm not really free ever. And so it took her a second to say, all right, Wednesday nights from 6 to 9, I'm free. And we said, all right, who in your community is either interested in learning or speaks the language? And so she ran through the list, and it kills me every time I hear this. When a person can name off all of the speakers in their community, that is, again, a community. That's a really big sign that a community is in trouble. The nice thing is that she knows who all of them are. So that's a benefit, but it's kind of this sort of benefit within tragedy where, you know, people can start naming off all the speakers. That's trouble. And naming off on one hand or naming off on two hands all the speakers. So she names off, you know, who she's going to go specifically language hunt, which is this young guy. I guess he's like 21, 22, which is fantastic. He's an advanced speaker who's 21, 22. And she is going to go show him where are your keys, and she's going to play with him. And so we said, okay, well, who are your backups? Let's say you get a flat tire. What's your backup plan? Well, I'm going to go see somebody else. And we said, who? And so we start writing this down on a little piece of, you know, menu paper, a placemat paper from the Chinese restaurant that we were at. and we basically hatched a plan with her about how she's specifically going to go about getting her language. So we wrote down the time. We wrote down that she is going to go language hunt this specific person. If she can't get a hold of him, she's going to walk to this other person's house and start with there. And then did we end up setting a specific Skype date with her to talk with her about that? Or we're going to do that this week?
You were going to do this week, but okay. It is Thursday, like morning or lunch is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to...
Thursday,
so the day after she does her thing, we are going to call her. And we told her sort of right up front. We're like, look, this is kind of a little bit sharp, a little bit brutal, a little bit like you can't escape us.
Yeah.
We are going to do this. And we said, really, what we are doing with you right now in this Chinese restaurant is what you are going to do with someone else later. We could sit around and talk about what we would do, or we could just do it. And she looked at us and said, let's just do it.
Yeah,
and that was great. That's great to hear. And so we've hatched a plan. So, and that's what we want to be able to do with everyone that we come in contact with, is hatch a real, how are you going to do this? And not like, you know, it's not like this, how are we going to save our languages? It's like, no, how are you, Heron, one woman in the world, going to get your language back? And how can we help you specifically do that? How are we going to do that? And so we hatch these very specific plans with support, with backups, and with some, you know, wonderful intention about how we're going to go do this. And so that's what Willem and I are committed to doing. So, good luck, Heron. Let's do this.
So that's the end of Evan Gardner and I discussing and debriefing the training and the Wear Your Keys mentoring language that we did at the Save Your Language Conference, hosted by Dustin Rivers in Vancouver, BC, June 5th and 6th, 2010. You've been listening to episode 37 of the Wear Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson. Recorded June 20th, 2010. Thanks for listening.